This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Tyler Robinson allegedly confessed to killing Charlie Kirk in a handwritten note. He allegedly confessed in text messages. He allegedly confessed on Discord. He turned himself into the sheriff. His DNA is on the rifle. He's on surveillance video, climbing onto the rooftop, crawling into a shooting position, and fleeing after the shot. And somehow, the prosecution is still finding ways to make this case look complicated. That's what the story is about. Not whether Tyler Robinson killed Charlie Kirk. By every available piece of evidence, that question has an answer. This story is about every system that was supposed to prevent it, every institution that was supposed to solve it, and every professional who was supposed to prosecute it. Each one of them, in sequence, found a way to fail. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. This is not a story about politics. We are talking about a murder case, all right? So know that going in. I'm not going this side or that side. I'm talking truth to reality to power to what the hell's going on here, because none of this is it's making a whole lot of sense. It feels like there's a lot of incompetence at play here. Or I don't know. I don't know. And again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, there is no wrong answer. I'm just saying going into this, no, this is not a political piece, okay? Charlie Kirk was obviously one of the most recognizable political figures in the country. Like him, hate him, he was. He co-founded Turning Point USA, built the largest conservative youth movement in America, and was one of the closest allies to the sitting president outside of government. He had millions of followers. He had a wife, Erica, and two young children. He had a security team that traveled with him because he received constant threats. He was 31 years old. And whatever you thought of his politics, and people thought a lot about his politics, obviously, he was, in fact, a human being. He walked onto a college campus on September 10th of 25 to do something he'd done hundreds of times before. Set up a tent, took questions from students, and 14 minutes in, a single rifle round hit him in the neck. He died at a local hospital. His window was, his widow, in the courtroom at the preliminary hearing. His parents were there. His kids will now grow up without their father. So here's a question that we have to ask, and a question that nobody in a position of power in Utah seems to be able to answer. How did every layer of protection around this man evaporate? We're going to talk about that first, okay? And we're going to get some more things as we mosey on down this conversation. I'm throwing it out there. I'm throwing these questions out there. I'm not throwing them out there with an answer. I'm throwing them out there as a question, because they deserve answers. Let's start with the university. Utah Valley University's outdoor courtyard, the venue for the event. It sits in a bowl surrounded by multi-story buildings, rooftops with direct sight lines down into the speaking area. Kirk's security chief, Brian Harpole, says he flagged the rooftop exposure to UVU police chief Jeff Long 2 weeks before the actual event. He asked whether the university would station officers on the roof or let Harpole's team do it. According to Harpole, nobody was ever actually assigned. His 12-member private security detail built barricades and presidential-style zones around the stage, but their justification stopped at about 30 meters. They couldn't enter student buildings. They couldn't patrol rooftops. They couldn't make arrests. Everything beyond the bubble was supposedly the university's responsibility, from what we understand as of right now. And the university, by all available evidence, did almost nothing. Six officers, that's what UVU put on this event. Six campus police officers for a crowd. It was supposed to be about 600 and turned out to be more than 3,000. No drones, even though both Orem PD and the Utah County Sheriff's Office had drones. Neither was asked to help. Fly around, keep an eye on things. Like the rooftops. that this might be a great place for somebody to go should they have ill intentions. No bag checks, no metal detectors, no dedicated ambulance. The university didn't even have a fire marshal on staff to help plan safety at large events, which is kind of basic for planning a large event. Sometimes you need like permits and things of that nature. I don't know how it works there in Utah, but it just seems like nobody really stepped up to the plate on the part of the university from my perspective. Why? And there may not be a big evil dark conspiracy road to that. It may just be incompetence. Incompetence quite often does look like conspiracy. I don't know is what I'm saying to you. So don't think I'm going this way. I'm throwing the questions out there. And I'd love for you guys to weigh in. We have not talked about this story at very much length other than when it happened a year ago. But it's time that we have this conversation about what the hell's going on here. This wasn't some freak failure that nobody could have seen coming. Former campus public safety leaders speaking anonymously because they feared repercussions say they warned the administration for years. They say a university VP named Val Peterson allegedly told them in multiple budget meetings over the course of a decade that because a shooting hadn't happened on campus in decades, it wouldn't happen in the future. Oh, don't we trust that? Apparently they did. The campus budget was nearly $250 million. The public safety slice, $1.6 million. Former officers say they begged for more personnel, better pay, better resources. They say they were told no. It hasn't happened in a long time, guys. It's not going to happen. We're good. It's all good. And again, would that really surprise anyone? It's simple. I know it's simple. But that's kind of how incompetence works. After the shooting, when UVU's president was asked whether there was a security failure, her answer was, and I'm quoting, "Somebody was killed and that's a tragedy. I think that's what I would say right now." Then declined to answer further questions. That's the person in charge of the 48,000 student campus where a man was just killed from a rooftop that her own officers say they warned her about. And the shooter, he had all the time in the world. Surveillance footage shown at the preliminary hearing captures Tyler Robinson climbing over a railing from a public walkway onto the loose center roof at approximately 12:15 p.m. He crawled into a prone position. A former UVU officer found the impressions in gravel afterward, elbows, knees, feet all pointed at Kirk's tent. The officer called it a sniper pad. Robinson was lying on that roof in position for at least 7 minutes before he fired. 7 minutes on an unsecured rooftop with a direct line of sight to a highly politicized target. Nobody checked. Nobody was there to check. So Kirk is killed. 3,000 people just watch a man get shot. Those are the ones in person, the millions who then have that image now forever scorched into our brains. What does law enforcement do? They arrest the wrong person. 71-year-old man named George Zinn walked up to a campus officer in the chaos 2 minutes after the gunshot and said, "I shot him. Now shoot me." He was handcuffed immediately. Videos of his arrest went viral. Social media declared the shooter had been caught. And then the FBI director posted on social media that the subject in Kirk's shooting was in custody. Utah's governor said a person of interest was apprehended. All of it was wrong. Zen was a serial disruptor with a 30-year history of showing up at political events and getting removed. He later told officers he did it to draw attention from the real shooter, that he wanted to be a martyr. His false confession diverted multiple officers from securing the scene and searching for the actual gunman. After they searched his phone, they found illegal material that led to a separate prosecution and a sentence of up to 15 years on charges that had nothing to do with Charlie Kirk. A second individual was also detained and released. None of it led to Robinson. You know what led to Robinson? His parents. The FBI released surveillance photos. Robinson's own mother and father recognized their son, confronted him, and convinced him to surrender. He turned himself into the Washington County Sheriff roughly 33 hours after the shooting. 7,000 tips came in. $100,000 reward was posted. The greatest law enforcement apparatus on earth was mobilized. And Tyler Robinson was identified because his mom and dad saw his picture and said, "That's our kid. That's our little boy. Look at him now. Oh, God, look at him now." Let's be clear about what the prosecution has, because on paper, this case is a freight train. Robinson allegedly left a handwritten note for his roommate and romantic partner, Lance Twiggs, before leaving for UVU that morning. According to prosecutors, the note said, "I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk and I took it." It continued, "I wish we could have lived in a world where this did not feel necessary." He allegedly texted Twiggs after the shooting, "I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out." He allegedly posted in a Discord group, "It was me at UVU yesterday. I'm sorry." Twiggs told investigators that Robinson came home the next day, paced through the apartment, cried, and said he wished he hadn't done it. His DNA is on the rifle. His DNA is on the towel the rifle was wrapped in. An ATF forensic biologist testified he was a primary DNA contributor to the weapon. Shell casings found in his apartment were matched to the same rifle by ATF testing. A Dremel tool seized from the home was determined to have made the engravings on the bullet casings, casings found both at the scene and in his apartment. Those engravings say things like, "Hey, fascist, catch," with gaming arrows, lyrics from the Italian anti-fascist song, Bella Ciao. Internet culture references, one casing at his apartment was engraved with the words, "Test shot." Surveillance video shows him on the UVU campus on the roof and fleeing after the shot. That's not up for negotiation. Alleged confessions in three formats, DNA on the weapon, matched shell casings, matched tool marks, surveillance footage of voluntary surrender. The defense across 5 days of preliminary hearing testimony offered no alternative theory. They did not suggest anyone else killed Charlie Kirk. Robinson declined to testify. This should be the most open and shut case in the Utah County Attorney's Office, bar none. So why does it feel like it's falling apart? Start with the bullet. The ATF tested a bullet jacket fragment recovered during Kirk's autopsy against the Mauser rifle. Inconclusive. The bullet hit bone, fragmented on impact, and the remains were too damaged for microscopic comparison. Forensic experts say this is not unusual. I know the internet's filled with theories. I have talked myself with ballistics experts, and you've probably seen them, and you've probably seen many, 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 many people. And ballistics experts who are not political, who just are telling you how this stuff works, have explained it. Forensics experts say it's not unusual. A 2022 study of a 79 firearm examiners found that they report inconclusive findings in roughly 20% of casework. The way a bullet fires from a rifle is different than the way it fires from a handgun. Brian Anton just did a really good report on that. Check out his channel. Very interesting. Talking with a ballistics expert. That's probably one of the best ways I've seen this explained. I do recommend that if you want to dive in to understanding those ballistics more. Because to me, that also stood out as being a little different, weird. What do you mean? Prosecution cannot forensically prove the bullet that killed Charlie Kirk came from the rifle they recovered near campus. The spent shell casing matches. The casings from Robinson's apartment match. Everything around the bullet connects. The bullet itself doesn't. Not because it came from somewhere else, because it was too destroyed to test. That gap is a speed bump, not a sinkhole. Prosecutors have mountains of other evidence, but instead of treating it like a speed bump, the prosecution drove straight into it and flipped the car. After the defense referenced the inconclusive report in a court filing, media coverage went sideways. Tabloid headline declared the bullet didn't match the rifle. Not true. Conspiracy theorists called Robinson a patsy. The prosecution's own spokesperson, Deputy Utah County Attorney Christopher Ballard, went on to media tour, TMZ, USA Today, PolitiFact, Fox News. He was allowed to correct the misinformation about the ballistics report under the court's pretrial publicity rules, but he couldn't stop there. He told TMZ that prosecutors had ample evidence to overcome the presumption of innocence. He editorialized about the strength of his own case in an active death penalty prosecution with a pretrial publicity order in place. Here's what you can do. Here's what you can't do. Oh, you went way over that line. Judge Tony Graff held Ballard in civil contempt at the corrections about the ballistics report were permissible. The comments about the strength of the case were not. The judge said those statements possessed a substantial likelihood of materially prejudicing the proceedings. Why is that important, even if what he's saying is correct? Because you don't want to do this for the next 20 years. You don't want to go down a road where there's going to be a gazillion ways of possibly getting a retrial, of appellate issues. Just pull the emotions down for a moment and do your job. You're the professional here. Let's play within the rules of where you're supposed to go so you don't create appellate issues down the road. The judge is calling out that shit. The defense asked for the death penalty to be removed as a sanction. Graff declined, calling it grossly disproportionate, but ordered expanded jury sanction procedures and made the prosecution reimburse the defense's legal costs. Let me put that in plain English. The prosecutor who is supposed to be building a case for the death penalty got himself held in contempt of court for talking to TMZ in a case where the defendant allegedly confessed three times. The defense will carry that contempt finding into every future proceeding. Good job. The jury pool, already soaked in political media coverage and conspiracy theories, got harder to seat. And the prosecution did it to themselves. Nobody made them pick up the phone and talk to TMZ. Twiggs, the key witness, the roommate, the person Robinson allegedly confessed to in person, did not testify live at the preliminary hearing. His testimony was a pre-recorded video from April of 26, heavily redacted by the judge. He received limited immunity, which is important. When shown surveillance photos of the suspect, he said he couldn't identify the man with 100% certainty because of the camera quality. The defense fought to suppress the video entirely. This is the prosecution's star witness, and the jury, if this gets to trial, will see a screen, not a person. Closing arguments on probable cause are now set for September 1st. If Judge Graff finds the evidence sufficient, Robinson will be arraigned and enter pleas for the first time, nearly a year after Kirk was killed. And if it goes to trial, the death penalty stays on the table. Robinson faces seven charges, including aggravated murder. Nobody in that courtroom, not the prosecution, not the defense, not the judge, is disputing that Charlie Kirk was killed, father of two, a man whose wife sat in the gallery and watched surveillance footage of a rooftop and turned to embrace his crying mother. That happened. It's real. The question was never really who did this. The question is whether the people responsible for accountability at the university and the investigation in the courtroom are capable of delivering it. Because so far at every single checkpoint where someone was supposed to do their job, something went wrong. The university ignored rooftop warnings, the investigation arrested the wrong people, and the prosecution spokesperson got held in contempt. The bullet can't be matched. The key witness testified on video. Tyler Robinson allegedly told his roommate he wished he hadn't done it. That may be the only honest statement anyone involved in this case has made. Because every institution that touched this case, everyone, should be saying the same thing. Why aren't they? Again, your thoughts in the comment section. I am not trying to make this political at all. We are talking about a murder case. Like him, hate him, whatever. That's insignificant. We're talking about the law, how this is prosecuted, how this is defended, how it is following those rules, how this was investigated. There's a lot at play. And again, a lot of incompetency, which, as we always say, the incompetency can so often masquerade as conspiracy. And look, I'm not telling you anything's right or wrong here. I don't know the answer. But just keep that in mind. It is easy to go down the conspiracy routes on this case. It is easy to, I'm not telling you not to. I'm just saying, be careful. Incompetence masks conspiracy all the time. I'm telling you from the hundreds and hundreds of cases we cover, oftentimes simple does turn out to be reality, but who knows? Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I look forward to continuing our conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.